Welcome back to The Ed Show at MMS 2013 on Channel 9 stage. And today I am joined by Loud Steve. You were saying Loud Steve?
Loud's my nickname.
What's your full name, though? Steve Evans?
Steve Evans.
Steve Evans. You were presenting earlier today on, actually it was yesterday probably.
Yeah.
On Server 2012 in 60 Minutes.
Yeah, so it's Server 2012 Overview.
Yeah.
Primarily focused on, you know, cloud computing, doing private cloud stuff, and kind of talking about how, you know, Microsoft did Azure, and they realized, you know, they have this operating system that's not quite cloud worthy, and they did a bunch of stuff, and then it rolled down into the product that everyone else gets.
Okay, so that's kind of interesting from a perspective of just from your regular day life and working with stuff and things like that with consultants and with other customers, stuff like that. Who do you find is kind of driving the conversation around Server 2012? Are you having to be the one that goes to customers and say, this is incredible, you got to try it? Or are the customers coming to you to say, hey, man, I heard this is really good, I got a pain point, it's going to solve it? What's the conversation flow going with?
So I think there's a combination. You know, so 2008 R2 is pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, it's really good. I think the one kind of caveat to that is Hyper-V. I mean, Hyper-V is now, in 2012, is V3.
Okay.
And Microsoft, that's the version they always nail, right?
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
And so customers that are using Hyper-V in R2, 2008 R2, I think they're anxious to move to 2012.
Okay.
You know, Hyper-V is a big leap forward in 2012 space.
And what would you say for people that use that other product? Are they starting to ask and inquire about it as of yet, or are they still got their blinders on?
You know, I think it's a bit of both. There's definitely a, you know, hey, I've got this and it works well, and why, you know,
why change?
I got it's other very, projects going
virtualization
on.
Virtualization is a very sticky technology, man.
Right.
Once you've got sticky. An investment made in the platform, it takes an awful lot to want to go off and change
right.
that.
Right. And it, you know, 2012 doesn't have to be just as good, it has to be better.
Yeah.
To instigate a move. But I think people are looking at, oh, I got this branch office here, or I've got this dev QA environment, and I think that's where Hyper-V is going to make the inroads across the board.
Mm-hmm.
The people who are using Hyper-V R2, you know, they're definitely looking at moving up to 2012 for some very specific reasons.
Okay, so now you mentioned a whole bunch of technologies that we basically brought in from the cloud, our learnings from the cloud, and brought them into really what we're calling the cloud OS.
Yes.
I air quotes that because I don't like using the term.
I was kind of embarrassed. You know, I was making my laundry list and I was organized, and I was like, oh, you know, the cloud OS. And then I went and looked at some old tech ed videos, like, oh, I didn't come up with that.
Those crafty,
great minds think alike.
Those crafty marketers came up with that first, I guess, in the server BG side of things. Now, in your session, though, you broke it down earlier when you were having our chat before the interview started. It's a nice little groups of categories. Want to kind of go through a little bit of those categories?
So to me, the first one is networking.
Okay.
The networking stack, possibly the biggest improvement to networking since MS-DOS,
nice.
Windows for work group,
or the
I don't
separate
know.
Installable TCP/IP stack.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
With
exactly.
Trumpet.
And so there's two major components, and the first one is NIC teaming.
Okay.
So native NIC teaming is a really, really big deal.
You don't
deal.
Need to have the stuff if you're using the stuff from the vendor that says, you know, vendor X NIC teaming software. You're not supposed to use that anymore.
I would imagine that the vendors will tell you there's some reason their stuff is better.
Yep.
The reality is that the native NIC teaming, now when I call PSS, I don't get in that argument over, well, you know, we think it might be the Intel or the Broadcom
or
the whatever software, you know, and so it's just one vendor to go to. If you've got a server with half the NICs for Broadcom and half are Intel, the native NIC teaming is vendor agnostic.
Okay.
So you can NIC, if you could find 32 different NIC vendors and get them in the same physical box, you could team those all together in one big team.
Did you do that in your session?
32 different vendors?
Yeah.
I don't know if there are 32 different vendors.
That would have been cool.
And even if there were, I'm not sure which box you could get them into.
32 NICs is that one. Good point. Very, very good point.
So that's to me, that's a really big deal.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's PowerShell supported. You don't have to figure out this command line utility from a vendor that isn't well documented. And you know, you're running on core and you're having to try to figure that out. And then NIC teaming on top of that, the extensible switch. So the extensible part's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Where you can, you know, extend it to do virtual firewalls or, you know, monitoring, or if you're doing Cisco Nexus technology,
you
know,
you can get the Nexus in there too,
technology right in there. But to me, the really cool part is, you know, so you got your NIC team, you put your extensible switch on top of that. And then from there, you create these, what we call VNICs. So in the R2 days, you would have your management NIC, you'd have your heartbeat NIC, you'd have your live migration NIC, et cetera. Now you abstract away your physical infrastructure, your physical network layout from your logical network layout. So you have, you know, maybe a set of, let's say a pair of 10 gig NICs underneath your NIC team. And on top of that, you carve out a VNIC for your management, one for live migration, one for CSV redirects, you know, et cetera, whatever meets your needs. And that's what we call converged fabric. And, you know, so you just have a bunch of bandwidth underneath it, and you build what you need on top of that.
Very sweet. You're also mentioning, how does this fit, just as a curiosity kind of thing, because you mentioned NIC teammate, then you also talked about storage as well. How does it fit with regards to file server? Because we saw some really cool stuff with file server in the keynote. I know you missed the keynote because you were working, but in the keynote, there's some very, very cool stuff with actually showing file server having basically IOPS and amazing performance as good as, if not better, than direct attached storage.
Yeah, so SMB v3 is kind of like, that's the feature in 2012 that kind of, it touches everywhere.
Yeah.
It improves everyone's experience. And so the big thing with SMB v3 is, one, it's multi-channel. So if I got multiple physical paths, it will utilize multiple physical paths for those transfers. It's got, I'm blanking on the term, this seamless failover, transparent failover.
Yes.
Thank you for
you're welcome.
For that,
I
that
got it for
nudge
you.
There.
I got your back.
So I can do transparent failover. So when my file server fails over from one node to another, the SMB protocol handles that. My application doesn't know about it. Tremendous performance improvements. The scale out file system, so I can literally scale the amount of IOPS I'm able to push through an SMB share. And so really what SMB v3 allows is application workloads to run on it now. So now I can run my Hyper-V VMs over it. I can SQL now supports running on a SMB v3 file share.
Yep.
So it enables some really interesting scenarios. I mean, right now the SAN is king, iSCSI connectivity is king, but you now see a future where, you know, with SMB v3, with storage spaces, with scale-out file system, where, you know, instead of spending lots and lots of money on a SAN, we can now move to possibly, you know, commodity hardware and storage pools and move in that direction in the long term.
Now,
or if we're talking about a branch office, all of a sudden we've got, you know, we can get the functionality of a SAN without investing $500,000
Good point.
For a small branch office.
Good
and
point.
I think that's where it's really going to take root first
and
then move into the data centers.
Now, I asked you a question earlier about what was the most exciting thing with Server 2012, and you gave me a surprising answer to that one there. Do you remember?
Well, so cluster shared volumes.
Yeah, CSVs.
I think saying it's the most exciting thing. So here's how the presentation and the demos go.
Yeah.
Here's everything that drove you nuts about cluster shared volumes in 2008 R2.
Yeah.
And now all that stuff's fixed.
It's a nice way to lay it
out. So it's not so much that cluster shared volumes V2 is so great. It's just that cluster shared volumes V1 was so painful that now, you know, it's not painful, so it's amazing.
Okay.
Especially in the backup story.
Okay.
You know, so many backup vendors don't properly back up a Hyper-V cluster. And the amount of bending over backwards you have to do to get it to work properly in R2, and that just all goes away. It just, you know, Microsoft solved it for every single backup vendor at once. So a huge, huge win. You're not in redirect mode for the life of your backup. And then the nice thing is, even if you are in redirect mode, with the improvements made to SMB v3, and some other improvements made to the CSV stack, you can run in redirected mode. Mm-hmm. And redirected mode means node A owns the CSV in redirected mode, node B can't do direct IO for whatever reason, it will ask node A to read that data for it off of the shared storage. You can do that at 98% of direct IO.
Wow.
Which is, you know.
I didn't even know that.
So
that's cool.
you cut down on the likelihood of being in redirect mode is significantly lower.
Yep.
But when you are in redirect mode, it's not nearly as painful.
Okay. Interesting. So we covered off networking. We covered off storage, your favorite feature. What else did you talk about in your session, man?
The next kind of tenet, pun intended, was clustering.
Yeah.
And honestly, clustering, nothing revolutionary there. But two significant features, clusterware updating. So, you know, I'm able to set up clusterware updating, and it will move resources off of a node, patch it, move resources off of the next node, patch it, move through.
Yep.
So I can seamlessly patch my hypervisors or my file server clusters or whatever the case may be. And the next one is dynamic quorum, which is where let's say I have a 5-node cluster and I lose a node, instead of now having 4 out of 5 votes, I have 4 out of 4 votes.
Mm-hmm.
If I lose another node, it's 3 out of 3 and 2 out of 2 and 1 out of 1. So if as long as you're losing nodes sequentially, you can run your 5-node cluster with a single node, because it will dynamically remove those votes as we lose.
And hopefully lose you're nodes. Fixing them faster than you're losing them. Otherwise, you got other problems.
I mean, obviously, yeah. I mean, so that's the thing. If you've gone from 5 to 1 nodes over the course of an hour or so, yeah, you're in a really bad state. But at least you still have a cluster.
Yeah, true.
And that can be pretty painful sometimes to lose a cluster, even though, I mean, let's say you have a 16-node cluster. You could still have 8 VMs up. I'm sorry. You could still have 8 nodes up and lose the cluster.
Mm-hmm. Good
so
point. Yeah,
it would be kind of a painful realization on a bad afternoon.
Okay. Moving right along to the rest of it, what do you say?
Obviously, hypervisor's got to be in there.
Yeah, it's the one that everyone's talking about. It has all the airplay right now. That's the first default thing everyone goes to, but it is big changes that have happened.
Hyper-V in Server 2012 is it's the V3 product. It's huge. It benefits from all the things that we just talked about, though.
Good point.
It benefits from NIC teaming. It benefits from SMB V3. It benefits from the clustering improvements. So, yeah, Hyper-V is the one stealing the show, but there's all these supporting characters underneath it that are essential. But in Hyper-V, significant improvements to the VMs.
Massive scale is a big thing.
The scale is the big thing, yeah. So I believe now you can have a VM with up to 1 terabyte of memory.
Yes.
It used to be 64 gigs. I'm never going to see a VM with 1 terabyte of memory anytime soon, but at least you're in that range where I don't have to think about it anymore. I can have a VM with, now it used to be 4 virtual processors. That was kind of painful. Now I believe it's 64. I'm not even sure. It's some number where you don't even have to think about what the number is.
64.
And to me, that's what's important.
Yeah.
Is not what the actual number is. It's when I'm having conversations with clients, do I have to remember what these arbitrary numbers are?
Mm-hmm.
Or is it just to that point where it just doesn't matter?
Yeah.
The numbers are so big, it doesn't matter. So that's a big deal. Being able to do live merging of VHDXs is one of those things that doesn't sound like that big of a deal, but on a day-to-day operational basis, it really matters that you can eliminate those snapshots, get the performance improvements back.
Okay.
And you don't, when you have that maintenance window and you got 40 VMs offline all of a sudden, and you got 40 VMs trying to merge in their snapshots, and you create this massive IO bottleneck, we move past that now. The next one is live migrations. So in my lab, I have a Dell chassis with 32 blades in it. I have 1 6-node cluster, R2 cluster, and I have another 6-node cluster of 2012.
Mm-hmm.
I took a VM, 64 gigs of memory on both of them. I used consume from the Windows 2003 resource kit, so I'd balloon out all the memory, because a live migration copies over active memory set.
Yeah.
So I wanted to make sure all the memory was in use. Server 2012 took me 65 seconds to live migrate that VM.
Nice.
You want to guess how long it took on R2? And don't say like an hour. Like, be reasonable.
honestly,
I actually asked this question in my session yesterday. Yeah. I did it in reverse, though.
Yeah.
I said, how long do you think the 2012 migration took? And they said 5 seconds.
Yeah. Like, no.
Come on, man.
So are we talking hours or are we talking minutes?
It's still minutes.
Still minutes. But I would say
11 and a half minutes.
I was going to say 42 minutes.
Yeah. So 11, see, you're going to ruin me there.
I was trying to say it, man.
11 and a half minutes. So 11 times faster.
Yeah.
Exact same hardware, exact same network configuration, 11 times faster. So when you think about being able to move VMs around to do maintenance on nodes, all of a sudden, live migrating VMs off is not as painful as it used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, you can do an unlimited number of live migrations at a time now.
Sweet.
Defaults to 2. A limit of 2 by default. Test it on your hardware. Maybe 4 is the right number. Maybe 8 is the right number. Maybe 1's the right number. But you now have a lot more flexibility to evacuate VMs off of a node.
Sweet, man.
Plus, we can do storage migrations. We can migrate storage while the VM's running. And we can migrate a VM to a completely different host while it's running. Not being in a cluster.
Yeah, outside of the cluster.
Outside of a cluster.
Very cool, man.
Yeah.
Awesome. It's awesome. I'm going to say thanks a lot because we're just about out of time. But I'll make sure we have the link to your session down below in case people want to go off and hear more about Loud Steve and everything else. And thanks for taking time.
Thank you.
Cheers, man.
Take care.